Appreciate again the opportunity to come and be with you in this service and to share with you some thoughts that I hope will be something all of us can profit by, benefit from. Call your attention to this passage in Proverbs chapter 30, verses 24 through 28. Where the wise man says, there are four things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer, and conies are but a feeble folk, and yet their houses are in the rocks. The locusts have no king, yet go they forth, all of them, by bands. The spider taketh hold with her hands and is in kings' palaces. And then another passage which illustrates the same thing. In Zechariah chapter 4 and in verse 10, this question is asked, who hath despised the day of small things? You know, sometimes we look down upon small things as being rather insignificant and unimportant. For example, we like to do things in a big way. We like to think that we have big talent. We like to think that we have access to big opportunities. We think big in many respects, but we need to realize and understand the power of small things. Because truly, small things have great power and can be extremely important and extremely useful. Small things matter to the Lord. We see that over and over again in the Bible. A little bird, even though the great creator of the whole universe has a concern for a little bird. In Matthew chapter 10 and in verse 29, the question is asked, are there not two sparrows? Or rather, are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your father. The Lord even noticed the lowly sparrow, which, you know, to us is almost nothing. But God takes note even of a little bird. And also, he takes note of even a cup of water. In Matthew chapter 10 and verse 42, he says, and whosoever shall give to drink unto one of the least of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. Just the giving of a simple cup of cold water. The Lord takes notice of that if it's given for the right purpose. And also, as we noted in our class this morning, the Lord is concerned about little children. In Matthew chapter 18 and verses 5 and 6, the passage that we looked at this morning, he said, and whosoever or whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me, but whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. So the Lord is concerned about even a little child. We're talking about God. We're talking about the creator of this vast universe. And yet, he's concerned about a little child. He's even concerned about such a small thing as two mites. You remember this story in Mark chapter 12, verse 42 and 43. It says, there came a certain poor widow, And she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples and said unto them, Verily I say unto you that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had. Now, in today's currency, if we were to compare it, two mites would be less than a value of a penny. And yet the Lord took no notice of that. And the reason that he was noticing it is because of the fact that she was giving everything she had. And so even though it was a small amount, that was something the Lord took notice of. One soul is valuable in the sight of God. Among the millions and millions of souls in the world, just one soul is important. In Luke 15, beginning in verse 4, he asks, What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it? I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. Even one person, one soul that repents, the Lord takes notice of that. And that one soul is important to him. Besides that, really, when we think about it, we're affected more by the little things that are beneath our feet, even more than the things that are above our head. Yes, it's true that the sun is important to us. It warms our bodies, and it causes crops to grow. And it's true that the moon has its influence upon us that's important, the rising and the falling of the tides. And in other ways, the moon is a very influential heavenly body. But we're affected more by the things we cannot see beneath our feet. In the dirt, in everything that exists under our feet. It's all made up of tiny things called atoms. And you can't see an atom. You have to have an electron microscope in order to even see it. And yet, everything is made up of those little tiny things called atoms. And the body is made up of cells, little tiny cells that make up our human body, small things, and yet they are so important. We know, of course, that big things are really made up of little things. A building, for example, you know, we see this big, beautiful building, and it's very impressive, but that building couldn't be there if it were not for little things that made it possible. I mean, there are bricks and the blocks and the boards and the nails and all of those little things that went into the construction of that building. It couldn't exist without those things. And so it certainly shows the value of little things in that respect. Or you take a book, any book, is made up of 27 letters of the alphabet. And those 27 letters are combined in such a way that volumes upon volumes and libraries upon libraries of books exist. They could not exist, at least in our language, unless we had these little 27 letters. And You take the change in your pocket. You know, it's very insignificant. In fact, we usually, lots do, try to get rid of it if we can, because it just rattles around and it kind of heavy, hangs heavy. But it adds up. Let me share this little article with you. This was written in 2016 in the AARP Bulletin. And it tells about the change that the TSA agency collected during 2000, and I believe it was 2006, I believe. But it says last year, the agency collected $765,000 in loose change from the trays where people place their watches and wallets and belts at airports and train stations and so forth. The figure has almost doubled since 2008, and for now it goes straight into the TSA's pockets. But Congress is still debating the Loose Change Act, which will give the money to charity. You just think about that. You don't think about change being very important, but all of this put together adds up. And, you know, most big things are dependent upon little things. When we lived in Canada, in fact, not long after we moved up there, I bought the first model of the Chevrolet Corvair that had been built. I bought one of their models in Medicine Hat, Alberta. And the fact that I was one of the first ones to buy one of their models, my name got in the paper, my picture got in the paper, and all of that. Well, I was pretty proud of that little car. And I got in it and drove it home. And on my way home, I was going up a hill. And about halfway up the hill, the thing just stopped. Now, the motor was running fine, but the car stopped. It wouldn't go anymore. And I couldn't get it to move. So I contacted the dealers, and they came out with a wrecker and took it back in. And it took 3 days before they got it fixed. They had to go into the transmission, and when it was all said and done, there was a little part that cost 10 cents in the transmission that had caused the problem. And that whole car was dependent upon that one little 10 cent piece. And then you probably remember this as well. In April of 1990, the Hubble telescope was launched into space, into its place, and it cost $1.6 billion, you know, for that, all for that to take place. And as soon as they got it into place, there was trouble, there was problems with that Hubble telescope. The problem was a few 25-cent washers that the technicians used to fill in a gap in the optical testing device that had shaken loose. And the cost of the rescue mission to its Hubble telescope was $86 million. A little thing. But that little thing, you know, caused so much trouble. Most little things are dependent, I mean, most big things, rather, are dependent upon little things. And some little things can be exceedingly destructive. We know that, of course, that termites, you know how destructive they can be, and yet they're just little small creatures. Germs, certainly, and a single match can cause a huge fire. And even sand, such a small thing as sand, can cause a lot of problems. For the novelty of it, this article tells us, for the novelty of it, a man walked from the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco to New York. He was asked what were the greatest difficulties that he encountered on the trip. And the interviewer suggested that it must have been the great mountains that exhausted his strength, or the turbulent and swollen rivers that he had to ford, or the hazards of the deserts, or the biting wind. But to all of these obstacles, the traveler said, no. He said after a while, what almost defeated me in my journey across the continent was the sand in my shoes. Little things, and yet how destructive they can be. We all are familiar with the coronavirus and what a small thing that is. That is, as far as the virus that causes all of that trouble, and how many people have died throughout the world because of this virus. But it's such a small thing. The atom bomb and the hydrogen bomb are, you know, made from these atoms that scientists have been able to split. But those atoms are so very, very small. And yet how powerful and how destructive they can be when they are made into a bomb. Well, the tongue is sort of like all of those things. The tongue is a small member of the body. You remember, James says, even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. Yes, the tongue is a little member of the body, and yet it can be very destructive. Proverbs 18:21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. It can do so much damage whenever it is not kept in control. And these things, we sometimes think they're just little and insignificant, and many times we don't put up guards for these things. But pride and jealousy and impure thoughts, you know, these are small things we think. And yet, these things can be the very things that condemn our souls. These things can be so harmful. They can do so much damage, not just to us, but to other people as well. Families and churches have split, have had feuds, and have split over the smallest of things. Brother David Lipscomb, who lived back in the late part of the 1800s and the first part of the 1900s, tells the story about a church that he knew of that had split. And the issue that caused them to split was the age of a hog when he sheds his teeth. And Brother Ed Harrell, when he lived up in the northern part of the country, where there's a lot of Mennonites, tells about a big division among the Mennonites. And the issue between them was whether it was right to wear, for the men to wear two suspenders instead of just one. They thought, some of them thought one suspender is enough to hold their britches up, and so they don't need two, and that's an excess when they have two. You know, these are such foolish and things that people divide over. But you know, really, when you get down to it, most church fusses, most of them at least, are over such trivial and foolish things. Little things can cause a lot of trouble. A moment of carelessness, just a single moment of carelessness, can really cause a lot of trouble. You think about King David. Here was this great king, but in a moment of carelessness, as he looked upon this beautiful woman bathing, it brought into his heart intentions that were impure, and he committed adultery with her. That in turn led to the murder of her husband in order to hide the event. And then after that, there was trouble in David's house and family all the rest of his life. One thing after another, and all of it hinged to that moment of carelessness. And the same thing can happen to us if we're not so careful. Because a moment that is careless can cause a lot of trouble for us. No wonder Paul in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 22 says, abstain from all appearance of evil. Some little things can really accomplish great things. You know, there are a lot of Bible examples about that. Take, for example, Gideon's small army. You remember that the Midianites had invaded the land and they were oppressing the Jews. And they were powerful, a powerful nation. And their army was huge. It numbered into the hundreds of thousands. And it was attacking and threatening the Jews. Well, Gideon, as a judge, gathered the Israelites together. He had an army of 32,000 ready to fight the Midianites, and that was small by comparison to what they had. But God said, no, that's too big an army. That's too many people, lest they think that they've done it without my help. And so you remember the story that he had them come down to the water and to drink. And he selected out of those 32,000. He told the rest of them, he said, just go home if you don't want to fight. And he selected, in the final analysis, he selected 300 men. 300 men to fight the thousands and thousands of Midianites, trained men. But, as you know, they won a great victory that day and chased the Midianites out of their country. The reason, of course, is because God was with them. But here was just a small thing, a small army that accomplished so great a thing with God's help. We're all familiar with David as he fought the giant Goliath. Here was this mighty giant, probably close to 10 feet tall, or perhaps even more than that. And he was dressed in this great armor and helmet, and he had this shield, and he had an armor bearer that went before him, and he had a sword. And here was this strapping youth who had never fought a battle that came to him without such paraphernalia. The only thing he had to him was a sling. And yet, with that sling and that stone, he brought down the mighty giant. Just a small, insignificant thing. And yet, he certainly accomplished something great because he delivered the Israelites from the Philistines that day. And then there was that little boy that Jesus, when he was teaching the multitudes, in fact, there were over 5,000 people that were there on that occasion to hear him teach. And they had been there a long time. And finally, Jesus said, told his disciples, he said, feed these people, they're hungry. And they said, what are we going to use? We don't have any food except the lunch of this little boy, 5 loaves and 2 fishes. What's that among so many? Jesus took it and offered thanks. And he said, now divide it to the multitude. And he fed every one of them, and there was 12 baskets and more left over. A little thing like that, and yet when used in God's service, with God's help, it accomplished something of great value. God oftentimes uses small things, insignificant things, things that seem that are not important at all to accomplish what he wants to accomplish. And I think we can see that in many ways, but Paul points that out in 1 Corinthians 1:27. He said, but God had chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. Things which the world looks upon as being so insignificant and unimportant, or even foolish. And God uses these things. God doesn't think like man thinks. And this is seen with reference to the circumstances of Christ's birth. You think about this for a moment. Jesus was not born in a great city, even though he is to be king. He wasn't born in a great city. You would think that a king would be born in some great city. Most of them were. No, this was the little insignificant village of Bethlehem in which he was born. And it was not in a palace where he was born, as you would think kings should be born. It was in a stable. There wasn't room for him in the inn, but rather in this stable where the king was born. And not just the king, but the king of kings, born in a stable. How little and insignificant that is, and yet that's the way God chose to bring the King of Kings into the world. And then you think about Christ's choice of the apostles. I mean, these apostles were not noteworthy men. These apostles were just common, ordinary people. In fact, they were poor people. And there were several of them that were just common fishermen. They didn't have formal education. They were just common fishermen. And then there, one of them there was a hated tax collector. And then there was a traitor among them. But, you know, these were not noteworthy men. They were just common, down-to-earth, poor people that the Lord chose as his apostles. And then you think about the beginning of the kingdom of God. This is the kingdom of prophecy. The prophets had often pointed to this great kingdom which would become a world empire. And you know where it began was in the relatively insignificant city of Jerusalem. As cities go, Jerusalem was really a small city in that great Roman Empire that existed in that day. It was not a noteworthy city among the cities of the world. And there were just a very few, a handful of disciples that were there, that composed the beginning of that great kingdom. How insignificant these things were in comparison to the mighty kingdoms of the world that had come and gone and conquered the world in the way in which they did. But we see none of that here. Just out of these few disciples from the beginning, when God sent the Spirit upon the apostles and they preached to the people and then converted several thousand, and yet that was still small by comparison to the kingdoms of the world. But what happened? With that small, insignificant beginning, that kingdom spread and grew, and in a period of 30 to 50 years, had conquered Rome, had spread throughout the world, and even the enemies were saying, "They that have turned the world upside down are come here also." What a great thing out of such a small beginning. So God uses insignificant things to confound the wise. And, you know, even a small amount of talent can accomplish a lot. You remember when Moses was herding sheep on the slopes of Mount Sinai, and he saw this burning bush. And it was strange because it just wouldn't be consumed. And he approached it, and a voice came out of it. "Take off your shoes, you're on holy ground." And then the Lord spoke to Moses and he said, "I have a mission for you. I want you to return to Egypt and deliver my people out of bondage." Well, this was a shock to Moses, and he tried to wiggle his way out of it. He made all kinds of excuses. He said, "I can't talk. I don't have the ability to do this." But you know what happened? In the final analysis, Moses became one of the greatest leaders that ever existed. He went back, confronted Pharaoh, led this people out of bondage and led them through the wilderness, 40 years of it, to the shores of their destination. A little talent may seem insignificant to us, but when we use it in God's service and with God's help, it can do great things. It can accomplish great things. Ephesians 3, 20 and 21 makes that plain. He says, "Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us, unto him be glory." He can do more than we ask for. He can do exceedingly more than we ask for or that we think we can do. He can do exceeding abundantly more. He piles up those, I guess you call them superlatives. But the Lord is able to do these things with the small amount of talent that we have. If we will let him do that, if we will let him use our talent in his servant. A helping hand in the visit of the sick, it can accomplish a great deal. And it doesn't take much time, it doesn't take much trouble for us just to do a favor or help in some maybe minor way, and it may accomplish a lot. Brother A.J. Rollins, who is known to some of you, who preached so long at Market Street, one day went to, well, there was a family, a man actually from up north that had come to visit one of the members at Market Street. And Brother Rollins had met him and shaken hands with him when he came to services that day. He was not a member of the church. He was just a relative of one of the members there. And while he was in Athens, he got sick, seriously ill, and was taken to the hospital here. And Brother Rollins took time to go and see him and had prayer with him. And that made a great impression upon this person. And so just a few days after that, after he got out of the hospital, he returned back to home, up north somewhere, back to his home. And he was so impressed with this little act of kindness, Brother Rollins, that he looked up a local Church of Christ and started attending. And in a little while, he obeyed the gospel. And so this little act of kindness on his part, Brother Rollins' part, led to such a great thing. And it could with us as well. Matthew 25 and 40, Jesus says, "Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me." So whatever little acts of hospitality or kindness that we perform to anyone, especially any who is a Christian, he said, "You've done it unto me as well." An act of hospitality of any kind can be very important. You know who we think about when we think about doing an act of hospitality without realizing, you know, the importance of it was Abraham. There were three men that came to Abraham's tent. I mean, he thought they were just men. And yet he showed great hospitality toward them. And it wound up that they were angels. One of them, the Lord. And so we're admonished. "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." Just simple act of hospitality, such a small thing, can accomplish something important. Or an encouraging word. Just speaking an encouraging word sometimes can lift the spirits of someone else, perhaps can prevent some tragedy or help in some way. In Proverbs 25:11, he says, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver." In 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11 and verse 14, Paul says, "Encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing. Encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all." Simple little things that we can do. And a prayer. Just praying for somebody. You think, well, you know, prayer's a prayer. Not going to do much good, but I'll utter a prayer on their behalf. How can we know how much good a prayer can do for people? After all, the prayer is going up to someone who has the power to help. And it's important that we pray and realize that there is power in prayer. James says, "The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." It does a lot of good. Or a simple invitation to service. You know, just inviting someone to our services and come and visit with us. You know, that might possibly lead to the conversion of that person. It has in many, many cases. And the conversion of one soul can have great effect. It can lead to the conversion of so many others. Years ago, back in the 30s, Brother Ira Douthat, he was a well-known evangelist in that day, held a lot of meetings. And in those days, people, there were a lot of conversions. Almost every meeting that he went to, he would convert 10, 15, 20 people. That was not uncommon at all. Even when I began preaching, you know, there were so many more conversions than there are now. Brother Douthat went to this place for a meeting. And he came away disappointed because there was only one only one response to the invitation during his meeting, and that was a little 13 or 14-year-old boy. And so he was really quite discouraged when he left that meeting. He thought, you know, we just didn't accomplish much here, did we? Years went by. I don't know how many, probably 20 or, you know, 18 or 20, something like that. And he was on a train going to some place to hold a meeting, and a young man walked up to him and looked at him, and he says, "Aren't you Ira Douthat?" He said, "Yes. Who are you?" He said, I'm Brother Luther Roberts. I'm a gospel preacher. I have just come from a meeting where we baptized 15, and I'm on my way to another meeting." And that man, and this is a true story, I asked Brother Roberts about this. I knew him personally. And Brother Roberts was a well-known preacher on his own. He had baptized many, many different people. And he was that young boy that had responded to the invitation when Brother Douthat felt like it was useless or had almost wasted his time. So the conversion of one soul can lead to the conversion of so many souls as well. You know, this article, I want to share this with you. It says, "My mother," it's written by David Guthrie, "My mother recently learned the story about how her family became Christians. Her uncle William Will Etheridge left home as a teenager and went to work in a small town. Seeking social excitement, he bought season tickets to the local dance hall. As he was walking to the first dance, he came by a brush arbor where a gospel meeting was in progress. It was too early for the dance, and the preacher sounded so interesting, so he decided to take a seat and listen for a while. He had never heard preaching like this before. He was very impressed with the Bible truths that were presented and decided to become a Christian that night. He tore up his tickets to the dance and made his lifelong commitment to Christ. He went back to his home near Paris, Tennessee, and converted his father, stepmother, brothers, sisters, half-brothers, and sisters. This occurred around the year 1890. Through his influence, over 100 of his family's descendants have become Christians. But this is not the end of the story. Will Etheridge then went to a Bible college and became a gospel preacher. He preached for about 50 years in several states and held gospel meetings in many places." That's one of so many examples. I could personally, had we the time, tell you about, you know, certain ones that I've known that have been converted and what resulted from that conversion in their life and how many were influenced by them. It happens. And you can be the same way. You can convert one soul that might in turn convert many others as well. So just one soul means something and has potential. The way that we treat little things in our life is really an indication of how we're going to treat big things. And that's what Jesus tells us in Luke 16 and 10. "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much." So the way we treat little things, our attitude about little things and how we use them, is a pretty good indication of, you know, how we would treat any big things that might come along. So let's not despise the day of little things. Let's realize how important and how powerful small things really are. It may be in this audience tonight, that, or today rather, that there are some who would desire to come in response to the gospel. If you have a need to respond in any way, and if we can be of assistance to you, we encourage you to come while we stand and sing.